on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And yes, got a good show for you again this evening. Obviously still talking about COVID because it hasn't quite disappeared yet, has it? But thankfully it's lessening a little bit. But starting off with the usual news roundup. So we're very much focusing on how you can keep yourself in tip-top health in general and not just fighting the virus. I'll continue with our news roundup now. So a glass or two of alcohol can help us live longer when we reach the age of 65, but it can take years off the lives of younger drinkers, say researchers, who think this explains the contradictory health advice we've been getting about drinking. More than a third of all deaths from alcoholism happen to people between 20 and 49 years old. And so when medical researchers recruit older people for their studies, the problem drinkers may already have died. Now, as a result, modest drinking becomes a health benefit in people over 65 and accounts for half the lives that are saved through drinking, such as from improved heart health. Less than 15% of lives lost through excessive alcohol drinking occur in this age group. So despite the dire warnings from health officials that even one sip of alcohol can send us to an early grave, modest drinking comes with a relatively low risk. That's according to researchers from the Boston Medical Center, especially as we get older. And placebos apparently do work, and that's true for the psychological type as well. That's according to latest research. Placebo pills are often found to be as effective as the drug they're compared against, suggesting it's the mind or perception of the person that matters more than the chemical agent. And the same is just as true for purely psychological placebos, where nothing is physically being taken. Researchers from the University of Basel tested the theory on a group of 400 people who were shown the colour green in a series of video experiments. However, some saw the colour without explanation, while others saw it with a narrative that the colour was calming and had a positive effect on emotions. And those who heard the narrative reported a greater sense of well-being afterwards, and these positive feelings lasted for a week. So green is obviously very good to be around, isn't it? Well, it's a natural colour, isn't it? Just get outside in nature with grass and the trees. And apparently mushrooms can reduce the risk of breast cancer by 64%. And they can also keep you mentally sharp as you get older. Just two servings a week reduces the risk of mild cognitive decline, such as an occasional memory loss or lapses in concentration. Around 50% in actual fact. Now, this is generally seen as early stage dementia. Although nobody is quite sure why mushrooms have such a therapeutic effect, researchers think it has to do with a compound which is found in most types of mushroom. Researchers from the National University of Singapore studied the effects of various mushrooms such as golden, oyster, shiitake and white button on a group of just over 600 people aged 60 and older for 6 years. That's a lot of sixes in there. The researchers tested the group on a range of cognitive language and visuospatial skills, as well as recording how much and what types of mushrooms the participants were eating. They discovered the optimum amount for protection was one serving, which equates to 3/4 cup of cooked mushrooms or 150 grams twice a week. The mushrooms' protective effects were surprising and encouraging, the researchers said. And allium vegetables, garlic, leeks and onions, have a powerful protective effect on bowel cancer, which is the world's third most common cancer. People who regularly eat the vegetables lower their risk of developing the cancer by 79%, a new study has discovered. Around 1.4 million people around the world develop colorectal cancer every year, and it's usually associated with growing older and eating a poor diet. Researchers in the First Hospital of China Medical University say there's a direct link between the amount of alum vegetables in the diet and their protective effect. In other words, the more you eat, the lower your chances of developing the cancer. They matched just over 800 colorectal cancer patients against 800 healthy controls and assessed the diets of both groups. Now, atrial fibrillation or irregular heartbeat can be controlled by four simple lifestyle changes. The condition is one of the major causes of stroke and is thought to affect one in four adults over the age of 40, and yet it can be easily managed by lifestyle changes. That's according to researchers in the University of California at San Francisco. Sufferers say they're more likely to experience a bout of irregular heartbeat after one of these particular behaviours, either drinking too much alcohol, that was the most common cause, caffeine, that was the next, excessive exercise, and then a poor night's sleep. And often the sufferer said two of the lifestyle factors together had triggered an attack. So as well as causing stroke, atrial fibrillation can lead to dementia, kidney disease, and heart attack. And chemicals around the home could be making men less fertile, and researchers were able to pinpoint the cause because the same thing is happening to the family dog as well. The common chemical DEHP, which is found in carpets, flooring, upholstery and wires, and the industrial chemical PCB, which is still found in foods despite a global ban, were the main causes for a decline in sperm quality. And although it's declined by 50% over the past 80 years, scientists haven't been entirely sure about the cause, although they've assumed it's been a reaction to environmental pollution. But now they know it's much closer to home, in the home, in fact. The missing clue was provided by researchers at Nottingham University, who discovered that the family dog has also suffered a sharp decline in their sperm quality as well. The domestic dog is a mirror for human male reproductive decline. That's according to the researchers. Two pollutants were found in samples of human and dog sperm, and they affected it quite significantly, as well as causing DNA fragmentation, where the DNA breaks into smaller pieces. So be careful about what you're using as cleaning fluids around the home. And just when you thought it was safe to have a dental filling, after amalgam now is no longer to be used, it was 50% mercury, your dentist may soon be using a new compound that helps make car bumpers strong and protects wood decking. The new compound could soon become the standard filling material for cavities and is expected to be as strong and long-lasting as amalgam. Dental authorities around the world have quietly dropped amalgam after concerns that dentists could face legal claims from patients who have suffered poor health or worse after having the fillings. And dentists were banned from using amalgam on pregnant women, but many people believe that the vapours from the fillings have the potential to affect anyone. Now, researchers at the Oregon Health and Science University School of Dentistry have been developing the new compound together with a new, stronger adhesive. The resin compounds that have been replaced last for only between 7 and 10 years, and they can crack when people chew. But what's not known is the safety of this new compound and its long-term impact on health. So tests are still being done on that. Regularly sweating in a sauna can reduce a person's likelihood of having a fatal heart attack and has been proven to lower blood pressure and improve the function of blood vessels, which has to be good news. So as soon as we're able to get back in those saunas again, I think that will be good news for everyone, won't it? But I can't see that happening for some time, because I would imagine there are places that would carry a lot of germs potentially. And a lack of sleep seems to have more to do with hardening of the arteries, which is one major feature of cardiovascular disease, than eating a fatty diet. Not getting enough sleep on a regular basis can cause a build-up of plaque in the arteries, which causes them to stiffen and eventually close. The standard theory of heart disease states that fatty foods cause the arteries to clog up and narrow, but it has more to do with a neuroimmune axis linking sleep to the cardiovascular system. That's according to researchers at Massachusetts General Hospital. Sleep helps to regulate the production of inflammatory cells and maintain healthy blood vessels, and so it would follow that the lack of sleep has the reverse effect. Researchers demonstrated the effect on a group of laboratory mice. Although the cholesterol levels of the sleep-deprived mice remained the same, they developed larger arterial plaques and had the number of inflammatory cells known to contribute to atherosclerosis. And hypocretin, a hormone that helps regulate sleep, also helps control production of white blood cells, the researchers discovered. And chemotherapy and radiotherapy are standard approaches to slow the growth of colon cancer, but high-intensity exercise can have the same positive effect, a new study has found. Even a short session of high-intensity interval training can induce changes in blood cells that slow the growth of colon cancer cells, or even kill them off completely. These positive effects were seen just after one exercise session, although the colon cancer patients went on to complete 12 sessions over a month. Even after the first session, blood samples showed an increase in markers of inflammation, and when cancer cells in the lab were exposed to these samples, they started dying. That's according to researchers at the University of Queensland in Australia. Although earlier studies have shown that intensive exercise can slow the growth of cancer cells, the researchers were surprised to see it was also reducing the number of cancer cells, suggesting that they were being killed off. So that's good news. Exercise is good for you. Brilliant. Right. Now we're going to take a little break. And after the break, we're going to be talking about how vitamin D can help us in the fight against COVID. Stay tuned for more after this.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. Yes, we're going to have to talk a little bit about COVID this evening, just to make sure we're keeping ourselves in tip-top health again in the fight against it. Now, apparently nearly 99% of COVID-19 patients who are vitamin D deficient die. That's a lot. That's according to a study that adds to mounting evidence that the sunshine nutrient could be a coronavirus lifesaver. Indonesian researchers analysed hospital records of nearly 800 people who tested positive for coronavirus, and results revealed 98.9% of infected patients died who were defined as vitamin D deficient, yet this fell to just 4.1% for patients who had enough of the nutrient. So that's quite an interesting piece of information there, isn't it? Researchers warned the study was not definitive, however, because the patients with high vitamin D levels were healthier and younger. Now, it comes as health chiefs are urgently reviewing the use of vitamin D as a coronavirus lifesaver, with several studies suggesting that COVID-19 patients are far more likely to die if they have a deficiency. One investigation carried out by Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge found European countries with lower vitamin D levels have had significantly more pandemic casualties. The National Institute for Health and Care Excellence is conducting a rapid evidence review of the issue, and publication is expected very soon. So the Indonesian study was not associated with experts from any university, unlike most COVID-19 research. The team that has been published has yet to be reviewed by scientists, as it was done by independent scientists. They found vitamin D deficient patients were 10 times more likely to die when age, gender and comorbidities were taken into account. When controlling for age, sex and comorbidity, vitamin D status is strongly associated with COVID-19 mortality outcome of cases. And they called for randomised controlled trials, considered the gold standard of scientific research, to prove whether vitamin D can be a lifesaver. One in five British adults and one in six children is lacking in vitamin D thanks to poor diets, indoor lifestyles and lack of sunshine. Experts estimate around 1 billion people worldwide are deficient in the vitamin, with the figures having been described as global public health issues. Some scientists fear that the lockdown and months of living indoors have cut levels even further, and some ethnic groups tend to be at higher risk because their skin is less able to make the vitamin in response to sunlight. Older people are also in danger because the body gets less efficient at producing the vitamin with age. Now, Public Health England is working with NICE on the review and has asked the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition to carry out a separate report. So it's looking a lot more positive than it has been, though, isn't it? There's lots of things being eased up, and looks like the 2 metre social distancing rule could be coming to an end as well. But vitamin D deficiency. Now, BAME people may face a higher risk of dying from the coronavirus because they are more likely to have a vitamin D deficiency, scientists claim. The pandemic is seeing higher rates of people from Black, Asian and minority ethnic backgrounds dying if they catch the coronavirus. The reasons are still unknown and more likely to be numerous and complicated, but some experts think a lack of vitamin D may play a role. People with darker skin need to spend more time in sunlight in order to get the same amount of vitamin D as a person with lighter skin. For this reason, the NHS suggests people with African, African Caribbean or South Asian background could benefit from taking a daily supplement throughout the year. Vitamin D may have a protective effect against severe coronavirus by regulating the immune system, and deficiencies of it have been linked to other respiratory viruses. However, the largest study to investigate the link between BAME, COVID-19 and vitamin D in a UK population found no proof. Medical statistics at the University of Exeter have said preliminary research suggests vitamin D levels may also impact on the risk of people suffering from severe COVID-19 infections. In the UK and northern European countries, vitamin D deficiency is a public health concern because ultraviolet B light or radiation is of insufficient intensity for vitamin D synthesis during winter months. And this is a particular concern for people with dark skin, such as those of African, African Caribbean or South Asian origin, who will need to spend longer in the sun to produce the same amount of vitamin D as someone with lighter skin. So vitamin D tablets are cheap. Well, I say cheap, they can cost as little as 3p a day. And Public Health England issued guidance recently advising everyone to take the supplements. A trial that's being held at Queen Mary University in London is investigating how certain lifestyle factors, including vitamin D levels, affect susceptibility to the virus. Vitamin D could almost be thought of as a designer drug for helping the body to handle viral respiratory infections. A review from the University of Surrey, which was published in the British Medical Journal, found that vitamin D should not be seen as part of a healthy lifestyle. It should be seen as part of a healthy lifestyle, but not as a magic bullet, because the evidence was not yet clear. It has been shown to protect against acute respiratory infections and older adults. The group most deficient in vitamin D are also the ones most seriously affected by COVID-19. A previous study found that 75% of people in institutions such as hospitals and care homes were severely deficient in vitamin D. Now, NICE is working on a rapid evidence summary on vitamin D in the context of COVID-19 with the support from Public Health England, and this report will be published soon, hopefully. The NHS says the general consensus is levels of below 25 nmol/L, which is the equivalent of 10 milligrams per milliliter in the blood, indicate vitamin D deficiency. This is thought to be the equivalent of taking around 10 micrograms of vitamin D a day. The Institute of Medicine, which is a US health advisory body, states levels below 20 ng per milliliter is a deficiency. Large doses of vitamin D, though, can be dangerous, with anything above 100 micrograms to be taken only under medical supervision. And vitamin D deficiency, when the level of vitamin D in your body is too low, can cause your bones to become thin, brittle, or misshapen. Vitamin D also appears to play a role in insulin resistance, high blood pressure, and immune function, and this relates to heart disease and cancer, but this is still being investigated. Low levels of the vitamin have also been linked to an increased risk of multiple sclerosis. Although the amount of vitamin D adults get from their diets is often less than what's recommended, exposure to sunlight can make up for the difference. For most adults, vitamin D deficiency is not a concern. However, some groups, particularly people who are obese, who have dark skin and who are older than 65, may have lower levels of vitamin D due to their diets, little sun exposure, or other factors. Now, some signs that you could be vitamin D deficient is if you're experiencing lower back pain or bone pain in general, then you could have low levels of this vitamin, because vitamin D helps improve the way your body takes in calcium, which is essential for healthy teeth and bones. Someone with a vitamin deficiency in D3 will report aches and pains presented in their joints, bones and muscles. And a lack of vitamin D can lead to bone deformities such as rickets in children and bone pain caused by a condition called osteomalacia in adults. And vitamin D is essential in making sure your immune system is running at its full potential. And studies have previously found that vitamin D can help protect against respiratory infections. Vitamin D works with the cells in your body that fight infections. And if you're constantly coming down with a cold or the flu, then you might have low levels of this vitamin. So the best way to boost your vitamin D levels is to take a supplement. But there are foods you can eat to help you along the way. And these foods are oily fish such as sardines, herring, salmon and mackerel, egg yolks, mushrooms, fortified foods such as breakfast cereals and spreads. There are a few foods with high levels and some that should be used sparingly, but unfortunately there are few good quality natural food sources. So the oily fish, the mackerel, eggs, they do provide vitamin D. Otherwise, most other food sources come in the form of highly processed fortified foods such as margarines and breakfast cereals, which are probably not recommended to be eaten regularly in the diet. But supplements are available in two forms, vitamin D2 and D3. Most experts agree that D3 is the preferred form. Humans synthesize vitamin D3 in response to sunlight, and therefore it's the most natural form to supplement. And it's more available and significantly more effective at increasing blood levels than vitamin D2. Other symptoms to watch out for could be bones losing calcium, so therefore more susceptible to osteoporosis, and tiredness as well. Previous studies have shown that low blood levels can cause tiredness, therefore impacting how you go about your daily life. Taking vitamin D has been proven to boost energy levels, and it's also found that people taking the supplements had improved muscle function. So there we are, some good reports there for vitamin D. So it may be worth investing in a vitamin D supplement if you aren't already. Okay, we're going to look at some natural remedies for some common ailments next. So stay tuned for that. And yes, we'll have a little break. Stay tuned for more after this.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. Yes, let's look at some natural remedies. I mean, vitamin D obviously is one of the most natural remedies you can get, getting some from sunshine. But there are other ailments that we are suffering from, I've no doubt. So let's have a look at a few of those now. And let's discover what we can do to help our body's overall fitness. So athlete's foot, do you suffer from athlete's foot? It's a contagious fungal infection of the foot that causes nasty symptoms like scaling, flaking and itching between the toes. The culprit is a fungi called dermatophytes. And these mold-like organisms thrive in warm, moist environments such as inside your running socks. And when they invade the superficial layer of the skin, they cause skin cells to over-reproduce, resulting in thickened, scaly skin. As the fungi spread, so does the infection. And the conventional answer to athlete's foot is usually antifungal creams, sprays or tablets. But many of these are linked to unpleasant side effects such as skin irritation, gastrointestinal problems and even liver damage. Happily though, in many cases, natural remedies can work just as well, if not better than drugs, at fighting the fungi that cause athlete's foot. So I'll just go over a few of those now for you. Now, essential oils such as tea tree oil, which is a potent natural antifungal, is a simple and effective athlete's foot remedy. And it's a good one to try first as well. In one trial, a 50% tea tree oil solution cured nearly 2/3 of patients after a month. Less than a third were cured in the placebo group, and other antifungal essential oils include oregano, thyme, cinnamon, bark, lemongrass, clove and lavender. Now, as some people are sensitive to certain essential oils, always do a skin patch test before using any oil for the first time. And add a few drops of the essential oil of your choice to a carrier oil like olive oil or unrefined coconut oil and apply to the affected area twice a day. You could also pour the mixture onto a cotton ball and tape it to your foot overnight, or alternatively add a few drops of different essential oils to a hot foot bath with some added salt, which can enhance fungicidal activity, and soak your feet in it for 20 minutes a day. Ideally, continue the treatment for 2 to 3 months, and even if you notice improvements sooner, just keep on with the treatment to ensure the fungus doesn't return. And did you know, despite its name, athlete's foot can affect anyone? And it's thought that up to 15% of the population has it, especially men and older people. Now, a compound found in garlic, known as aegerine, has antifungal properties and is more powerful in treating athlete's foot than normal creams and popular antifungal medications or like Lamisil. 100% of patients rubbing on a 1% aegerine cream twice a day were completely free of athlete's foot after 2 months versus 94% in the terbinafine group. Aegerine creams are not widely available, but you could try using crushed garlic cloves instead, which is basically what they consist of. So if you apply a warm, moist compress to affected areas, heat attracts the fungus to the skin surface, making any treatment more effective. Place a well-mashed clove of garlic between two pieces of gauze, cut to fit over the affected area. Tape the open sides and then tape the whole patch to the affected area. Replace with a fresh mashed up garlic clove and clean gauze every 3 to 5 hours. Continue to do this until the infection clears and for a while afterwards to stop it from coming back. Alternatively, you can soak your feet in a solution of hot water and crushed garlic for 30 minutes daily, or apply minced garlic in olive oil with a cotton ball directly to the affected areas. Now, to preventing athlete's foot, dry your feet thoroughly after washing, especially between the toes, and always wash and dry your feet after a run. Wear moisture-wicking socks made of breathable materials when running or walking, and wash them after each use. Sprinkle naturally antifungal foot powder into shoes and socks before and after running or walking. Nutribiotic body and foot powder is a possible one to use, or plantation tea tree foot powder. You can find both of those online or in health stores. And banana-shaped shoe deodorizers made with antifungal essential oils and moisture-absorbing bamboo, charcoal, baking soda and zeolite are also available. And make sure your shoes are completely dry if you've been out in them before putting them on again. Consider alternating between pairs of shoes so that they have enough time to dry out between wears. And never share your shoes, socks or towels with others, and wear flip-flops or shower shoes when using communal showers, pools, fitness centres and other public areas, and let air get to your feet as much as possible when you're at home. And a number of herbs have been traditionally used in Mexico to fight fungal skin infections such as athlete's foot. Sosa or giant devil's fig and snake root have both proven effective in clinical trials. They may be hard to track down though, so consider contacting a qualified medical herbalist for a prescription. And vegetable oils exposed to ozone gas could help combat athlete's foot. In one study, ozonated sunflower oil was just as effective as the topical antifungal cream. But only the sunflower oil treated group remained fungus free 6 months later. Various ozonated oils are available online and they're available in health stores as well. So they may well be worth a try. So there's lots of things we can do, lots of natural remedies, isn't it, without resorting to tablets, which I think don't always work. Some of the medication from doctors doesn't always do the trick. So it's worth trying these things as well. And esophageal reflux or acid reflux, we'll go on to that one now. There's some natural remedies for that. I think most of us have experienced that from time to time. It's when stomach acid travels up towards the throat, causing a burning feeling in your chest, which is heartburn, or a horrible taste in your mouth. But when it happens repeatedly, it's called gastroesophageal reflux disease. And it can damage the sensitive lining of the esophagus, leading to other symptoms such as difficulty in swallowing, a lump in the throat sensation, and ulcers. Proton pump inhibitors like omeprazole are the usual treatment, but as you've probably discovered, they can come with some nasty side effects. And some of the more serious ones linked to the drugs include bone fractures, potentially fatal infections, and even heart attacks. Plus, around one third of sufferers still suffer from symptoms despite taking these. There are plenty of natural alternatives, though, and some, you know, you can use a combination of natural alternatives as well, and based on your symptoms and lifestyle, and just monitor your progress. Now, certain foods and drinks may worsen the reflux response, such as chocolate, fatty foods, alcohol, carbonated drinks, caffeine, cow's milk, and mint flavoured products. So avoiding these could help. It's also a good idea to keep a food and symptom diary to see if you can spot any connections between the two. And if some foods seem to bring on symptoms, try eliminating them to see if there's an improvement. And a recent study found that a high-carb diet caused more reflux symptoms in patients, while a low-carb diet had the opposite effect. So consider consulting with a nutritionist who can work out the right type of low-carb diet for you. And whatever you do, avoid low-carb processed foods and opt for real nutrient-dense whole foods instead. And stress has been linked to reflux as well, although it's not clear whether it's the stress that's causing the symptoms or the symptoms that cause the stress. Either way, stress reduction methods such as meditation, yoga or qigong could be beneficial. And a supplement containing melatonin, vitamin B6, folic acid, vitamin B12 and the amino acids L-tryptophan, methionine and betaine was more effective than the omeprazole for treating acid reflux symptoms in one trial. After 40 days, all patients taking the supplement were free of symptoms and side effects, compared with two-thirds of those taking the suggested treatment, the medical treatment. Another option is chewing gum for an hour after a meal. That could help ease reflux symptoms for up to 3 hours. Avoid the usual sugar or artificial sweetener packed gums though, and choose healthier options instead. Try and avoid lying down within 3 hours of having a meal. Elevate the head of your bed to prevent symptoms during sleep, and exercise regularly, but avoid more jarring activities such as rowing or running, which can make symptoms worse, especially straight after eating. And maybe a spot of acupuncture. This Chinese technique is safe and effective for reflux, according to a recent review of the evidence, and has been found to boost the quality of life in sufferers. And you can find a qualified acupuncturist online. Make sure you go for a reputable one. And aloe vera, known for its soothing effects, may help the symptoms as well. And in one study, aloe syrup was just as effective as the anti-reflex drugs and omeprazole and ranitidine for reducing a variety of symptoms, including heartburn, food regurgitation, belching and nausea. Maybe Chinese herbs as well. You could try going to a Chinese herb specialist. And abdominal exercises as well appeared to help in one small study. It may work by actively retraining the diaphragm, which is a muscle important for preventing reflux. So just abdominal exercise. Find yourself an exercise class to go to and get those abdominal muscles working. Right, another little break now, and after the break I shall be talking to you about sound therapy. Yes, music can soothe the soul and help the body. Stay tuned for more after this.
Pale pubescent beasts roam through the streets and coffee shops. Their prey gather in herds, the stiff kneeling skirts and white ankle socks. But while they search for a mate, my type hibernate in bedrooms above, composing their songs of love. Young uniform miners in uniform lines and uniform ties run around with trousers on fire and signs of desire they cannot disguise. While I try to find words as light as the birds in that circle above, to put in my song, my song of love. Fate doesn't hang on a wrong or right choice. Fortune depends on the tone of your voice. So sing while you have time, let the sun shine down from above and fill you with songs of love. Take me.
Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. Sound therapy is what we're talking about now. And if you're listening to the radio, then you're probably listening to all sorts of different sounds. Apparently in ancient Greece, music became so widely respected for its impact on physiology that it was even used to improve the sports performances of athletes during the Olympic Games. The ancient Egyptians used vowel sound chants in healing, and Australian Aboriginal peoples are believed to have used musical instruments for healing purposes more than 40,000 years ago. And now many therapists of different varieties are finding the power of certain sound frequencies to heal. Now, sound is a vibratory waveform measured in cycles per second that varies with time. The human ear can detect sounds from around 18 CPS to approximately 18,000 CPS. That's the equivalent to hertz or megahertz, like a voltage or current. Although as we get older, our hearing decreases in acuity. Young children can sometimes hear above 20,000 CPS, and dolphins and whales can produce and sense waveforms up to 180,000 CPS. So it's important to remember that just because we don't hear something doesn't mean that there isn't a sound. The entire universe is in a constant state of vibration, from the electronics moving around the nucleus of every atom to planets moving around their suns and distant galaxies moving around the galactic core. Everything is in motion and therefore making what can be perceived as sound. And Pythagoras referred to this as the music of the spheres. But it's not just heavenly bodies that emit sound. Even the chair you're sitting on, the book you're reading, the carburetor in your car, and the molecules that make up your body are in a state of vibration. In fact, each of them has a unique vibratory frequency. The foundation of sound healing is based on the understanding that every bone, every organ of the human body, even every individual human body, has a unique signature frequency that can be manipulated and modulated by other frequencies. So if your liver isn't operating at its correct frequency, for example, it can be tuned up through the application of the correct sound vibration. So one of the pioneers in this is somebody called Jonathan Goldman, who's an international authority on sound healing. He says the human body is like an incredible orchestra playing the symphony of the self. But when parts of the orchestra become out of tune and out of harmony, very soon the whole of the body is out of harmony as well. The whole orchestra sounds off. So we need to think about retuning our bodies. That's an interesting concept, isn't it? Retuning the body. So living cells have been proven to interact not just on a chemical basis, but to also actively generate, emit, and be affected by a wide range of electromagnetic signals. Cells communicate over a broad spectral range, from low frequency radio waves up into the visible light segment of the electromagnetic spectrum. And there are many theories as to how cells actually go about this electromagnetic communication. Up until recently, it was never thought possible that sound waves and electromagnetic waves could interact, because they are very different in nature. Nor had it been considered possible that sound could impact cellular function and communication. Sound is a so-called mechanical wave conducted through some sort of tangible medium, like air or water. Electromagnetic waves, on the other hand, are a form of energy transmitted as oscillating electric and magnetic fields, and they do not need any sort of medium to carry them. This is why, for example, electromagnetic waves can travel through the vacuum of outer space, but sound waves cannot. However, researchers at the Ohio State University recently demonstrated for the first time that sound waves actually do interact with external magnetic fields. And perhaps from a purely mechanical perspective, it makes perfect sense that sound frequencies affect cellular structures. Water accounts for more than 70% of total cell mass, and as early as 1680, English natural philosopher and architect Robert Hooke was demonstrating the effects of sound on various materials. Swiss medical doctor Hans Jenny as well built upon this research, dubbing the study of visible sound and vibration cymatics. And Alexander Lauterwasser, a German researcher and photographer, has applied Jenny's work to water, demonstrating the various patterns and waveforms it takes on water when sound is introduced. And it's quite fascinating. The perfect formations that sound makes, a bit like the patterns that you get in snowflakes and things like that. Quite incredible to see. So the different types of sound therapies then. What can we use to help us? And I think we know anyway that certain sounds make us feel good and some make us feel bad. So when we listen to a really soothing piece of music, for instance, music can help reduce pain, improve sleep, offer relaxation and stress relief, as well as positively affecting productivity and accelerating learning. Remember the Mozart effect? Classical music in particular has been shown to reduce heart rate variability and decrease stress hormone levels and blood pressure. So find a nice soothing piece of music to play for yourself, and that will really help you. So the music you can use to either help with your learning or help with your sleeping, and generally help with your well-being, because if you're feeling good, if you're feeling more relaxed, less stressed, then that's going to be good for your body and good for healing too. And then there's vibroacoustic therapy. This type of sound therapy involves delivering vibrational frequencies through speakers directly to the body. It's used to reduce pain and increase relaxation, among other effects. And then there's neurologic music therapy. This focuses specifically on the physical effects of music and rhythm on the brain's signaling pathways. It's used by people suffering from a wide variety of neurologic disorders, including autism, cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's disease, Down syndrome, and sensory integration disorder. And then we come on to bioacoustics, which is the study of sound vibrations emitted by living organisms. Bioacoustics mainly focuses on the sounds of the human voice. Voice analysis can reveal abnormal or missing vibrations indicative of disease in the human structure, which can be normalized by the presentation of the missing sound frequencies. And then there is singing bowl or crystal bowl therapy, and this method dates back to 12th century Tibet or earlier and has been used to augment meditation and rituals. Studies show it's an effective intervention for reducing tension, anxiety and depression, and it's also been shown to increase spiritual and emotional well-being. Hydroacoustic therapy, which is where music and tones are admitted through speakers into a deep tub of soothing water, where the patient can recline submersed up to the chin, absorbing the acoustic waves conducted by the water. And acutonics. This combines the use of tuning forks with oriental medicine. Tuning forks are placed on acupuncture points, supposedly activating the meridians to induce a healing and balancing response in the body. It's said to be an excellent approach for patients who are afraid of needles or too frail to tolerate them. And then gong therapy. A personal favourite of mine is gong therapy. Metal gongs of various sizes have been used in sound meditation and vibrational therapy for calming, energising and transformation since the Bronze Age. Personally, I found that kind of thing amazing. You just sit in a room and listen to the sound of the gong, and it feels like it's going into every atom of your being, sort of like bouncing around in your body. So I would thoroughly recommend trying it if you haven't done already. And then binaural beats. They're created when tones of different frequencies are sent to each of the two ears. The theory is that the brain then entrains or produces brainwaves at a third frequency. The difference between the first two, which matches one of the natural brainwave frequencies associated with different behavioural states. It's claimed that this process can induce relaxation, sleep, and enhanced focus. And studies have shown that entrainment is effective for improving sleep quality and reducing pain perception. Neurophone therapy is another type of brainwave entrainment, and the device encodes sound and converts it into ultrasonic signals of 40,000 CPS that are also said to open up brain pathways, apparently balancing the left and right hemispheres of the brain and increasing well-being. And then there's vocal sound healing. Chanting, toning and singing have been used to induce relaxation and regulate mood for thousands of years. Chanting and toning vibrate different areas of the body, and the vibrations can be directed through intention. And humming therapy. You don't even have to be able to carry a tune to hum. So you just hum, the simplest way to create the inner vibrations that can lead to calmness and well-being in the body. And then tuning fork therapy. This therapy uses calibrated metal tuning forks applied to different parts of the body to help release stress, increase energy, and promote well-being. Tuning forks are often used on trigger points with the aim to reduce pain and affect healing responses. So there, that's all about sound healing in a nutshell. So what I would recommend is to put on some nice soothing music when you're not feeling so good, and that will really help you to feel calm and accelerate the body's natural healing processes. So that's it for today, I'm afraid. I hope you've enjoyed the show once again. Hope you've got some useful tips for keeping your health and well-being in tip-top condition. And until this time next week, take care of your body and take care of yourself.
He's a 20th century boy with his hands up.